Heterodorks. Heterodox dorks.
Hey, TERFs and trannies. It's time for another episode of Heterodorks. I am your co-host, Corinna Cohn.
I am your other co-host, Nina Paley, and today we have a special, famous, or infamous guest, Kathy Brennan.
Hi, welcome.
That's really funny. Hello. Hello, everybody. That is really funny.
What's funny?
I mean, I'm probably completely irrelevant at this point.
But you're legendary.
I mean, I think anyone who actually knows me knows that I have no desire and never had any desire to be known at all in this discussion. So I'm not complaining about that. And yeah, I don't know. Anyway, hi, everybody.
Notice that I didn't say whether you're a TERF or a tranny.
Well, I think that's good because I think, you know, I think there's quite enough of tribes. I mean, if I had to pledge allegiance to a tribe, it probably wouldn't be either one of those.
But they're such awesome tribes.
I mean, are they though? I don't know. Like I've known Corinna longer in this discussion than you, Nina. And like when I first became aware of Corinna, like Corinna was like basically a Tumblr troll who was like, you know, sending me like harassing, but challenging repeated messages on Tumblr. And I, you know, like I'm 51 this year, like I'm gonna be 52. So this was probably, I don't know. I was like in like, you know, 43. I don't remember when it was, but I was too old for that shit. But in any event, like I actually developed like a real connection with Corinna because Corinna was like, oh snap. Like I see what you're saying. And like, I was, even though you were annoying, I appreciate, like, you weren't annoying in the way, like, you were threatening, like, to kill me or you wish I was raped. Like, you were, like, you had, like, a point of view and respect, you know, expressed it in a civil enough way. So that's how I met Corinna. And Corinna was anti-Orthodox for anyone who is aware of the early Tumblr discussions. And things on Tumblr were really wild, and like things have changed so much. I think that was like 10 years ago. And it's just like, we are in a whole other world at this point in the discussion.
What sort of things did you discuss, Corinna? What did you troll Kathy about?
At the time, I was still pretty solidly identified as, oh, I'm a special type of woman. I'm a trans woman. I know that's not the same as a natal woman, but there are so many things that we have in common with each other. And why can't we just find some common ground? The answer to that is because there's not very much common ground in terms of what sort of social stuff happens between men who identify as women and actual women. So at some point I was starting to read what Kathy was saying about, you know, here are some suggestions on how there can be some good ways of communicating between the feminist camp and the trans camp. And I thought the list of suggestions that she had was completely reasonable. And I was like, all right, well, I think these are all fair. I'm going to try to comport my behavior accordingly. And they weren't like big asks. They were just like how to approach some of these issues respectfully. I'll try to find that list. Do you remember? Do you have that still at all?
No, because my Tumblr account, because I was doing most of this stuff on Tumblr because it was just easy. And like, you know, I have a full-time job and I have two kids and I have like a family. So like all of this was in between my actual life. And Tumblr just was easy. And my Tumblr got nuked by some really disgusting man who, I think his handle was like Sissy Fag Crystal or something, who sent me like really abusive rape threats. And so everything that was on that Tumblr got nuked. And then I was, you know, I mean, I've had so many accounts nuked because I've said controversial things like trans women or men, and, you know, gender identity as it's written into law is nonsensical and swallows the rights of women, like stuff that now, like, people say, like, it's like, wow, like, I, like you couldn't say the stuff you can say now. Although, you know, I don't know if that's good or bad. Like, the way that this discussion has unfolded, I think, has been really unfortunate, because there was a moment when it was an in-group discussion in the LGBT community. And, you know, in some ways I wish it had been, my ideas had been received more respectfully. Because now we're in a world of hurt. And I say this as a lesbian, which in many ways is more important than me than being a radical feminist. Like, the stuff is not going well for gay people. So anyway, I tried. I did the best I could to thread a very difficult needle. And I don't know.
So do you still call yourself a radical feminist?
Yes, I'm definitely a radical feminist, but unfortunately, you know, after Trump was elected in the United States, as soon as Trump indicated he was running, I was like, we are so fucked, because I was like, Trump isn't going to get elected, because, you know, my guess was that's how much the country hates Hillary Clinton. Like, I'm like, there's no way she's going to get elected. And so when Trump got elected, I very intentionally just stopped talking about this issue as much as I could, because, you know, things were going to get real bad for gay people, for women, for people of color, like, because I, you know, I'm a left person. My politics are generally left, although left libertarian, which pisses off actual leftists at times, but I don't care anyway. But when Trump got elected, I was like, this conversation is going to change.
Could you maybe log out and log or refresh the window?
Yeah, hold on. I'll do that.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Hooray. I forgot what we were talking about.
Oh, I think we were talking about Trump.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, right.
This issue has been kicking around in the gay community for a really long time, and it's mostly gone unnoticed by people outside of the gay community. People like Alex Dobkin were, like, you know, harassed because of the position she took on this issue. Lisa Vogel, who organized Mishfest, took a lot of heat. So it was definitely, like, a known issue that, like, you know, people in the community, we mostly just worked around it. I myself worked around it quite a bit in the late 90s. And then, like, around 2010, like, it came up again, and it was like, shit, like, someone needs to say something about this in, like, kind of a direct way, because this is bad. And so that's why, like, I decided to take this on in a more public way, and it kind of really, it took off. And to the extent that people view me as infamous or famous or legendary or, like, a terrible, horrible person, like, that's why, is because no one else was talking about it in a public way using their own name.
And the it that you're referring to is trans issues, right?
Well, specifically, the it that I am talking about is using the concept of gender identity to override protections for females in law. And so, like, that in and of itself is kind of a narrow issue from a legal perspective. But that issue is also not super sexy. And, like, there's a lot more that people want to talk about. Like, the problem with this issue from an organizing perspective is it's super fucking messy. So I tried to stay pretty defined on what I was trying to do, because a lot of the culture war stuff that's happening now is not stuff I ever get involved in or care about. And in fact, I find a lot of it really offensive. And as soon as Trump got elected, it was very obvious to me that the people on the, quote, gender critical side, like, this was a great win for them, because it was an opportunity for them to vent their, you know, culture war issues in an environment where they were favored because we had a Republican president who was saying really, really fucked up, awful things all the time. And so, you know, here we are. And like you had efforts by various so-called feminist organizations to organize with the right. You had Wolf organizing with the Heritage Foundation, like all the stuff that just as a lesbian, I've viewed as and still view as a significant error and a mistake. But, you know, I'm just one person. So it's, I can't really do anything about what other people do. I can only control what I do.
And one thing that you did was you created the Pussy Church. What's the full name? The Pussy Church of...
Yeah. So in part of the recognition that Trump getting elected meant a change in environment where you would have, you know, people other than lesbians and radical feminists talking about this issue. In fact, you'd have people coming at it from the right and they would be far louder and like way more awful than anything I think feminists should be saying or believing, is the idea of creating space and legal mechanisms you can use to create space. And so myself and my then friend, now wife, came up with this idea of, you know, starting a church where you could use this as a mechanism for organizing. I mean, you don't really need it, but it was fun to do. Other people could do it. I believe that there are some lesbian feminists who are active at MishFest who are pursuing a variation of this. So that is something. Yeah. I've done a lot of different things to try to draw attention to this issue. You know, all I can do now is watch and see like how many hateful things gender criticals can say on any given day. Cause I really think it's embarrassing. Like this is a very like dumb time in our collective feminist history.
I know that there's some conflation between gender critical feminists and radical feminists, that those are sometimes used as interchangeable terms. But are there any women who, whether they're gender critical or radical feminist, however they describe themselves, are there any who you think are serving as good role models right now?
I mean, again, like this is just me, one person, my personal opinion. Gender critical, as I understand it, is a term that embraces people who do not identify as feminists. Like it's kind of like a catch-all for anyone who objects. The two issues I see gender criticals getting the most upset about are trans women and surrogacy. Like that's like the two big issues that they like to talk about. And it seems pretty devoid of an analysis of, you know, sex as being the basis for, you know, characterizing women as the class that should be oppressed. Because it's, you know, it's easy. Like, it's easy to just say these things. And then you get, like, people who aren't, maybe haven't read Andrea Dworkin, which is fine. Like, no one has to, you know, read what you want. But they don't really, they're just like, yeah, I don't like that either. Like, so, and it includes people who I think, you know, voted for Trump and would vote for Trump again, and who think COVID isn't real and who think, you know, January 6th was just a nice tour in the White House, like all sorts. It's like a whole wacky bunch of beliefs. So in the United States, I am not aware of a group in the United States that I would view as doing any kind of advocacy that resembles radical feminism. In the United Kingdom, I am aware of a number of women, and the women associated with Women's Place UK, I think, do like they try to maintain like this is the line in the sand. They eschew relationships with right wing organizations that are homophobic, racist, anti-Semitic. But other people might disagree with that. But yeah, I think before the conversation around trans happened, what was happening in the United States also wasn't feminism. Like this is a thing that I find very annoying about the way people talk online, is they're so goddamn reactive. Like they think if you disagree with something, you must be a trans activist. I've been accused of being a trans activist by more people like than I can count, you know, who have names like, you know, Goody Turfy, you know, and shit like that. And I'm like, you have to shut the fuck up. Like, am I allowed to curse on this show?
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay. Like, it's like, please get a fucking grip, you know? Like, please take a beat and like maybe don't be so reactive and like try to hear what people are saying. There's not a lot of that that happens. And so before there was like open criticism of gender identity stuff, you had all these stupid organizations that were like calling themselves feminists that were saying, you know, the ridiculous things that are also stupid, like the cotton ceiling stuff. Like, that's the dumbest shit I ever heard in my life. It's so awful and stupid. And it seems very obvious to like regular people that that's just wrong. But in the third wave feminist community, like, they were so offended that we pointed out, like, hey, this is a rapey concept. Like, what are you thinking? So I don't know, but there's not a lot of feminism in the United States.
How do you define feminism?
Well, how do you define feminism?
Hey, I asked you, you're the one bandying it around.
I mean, so I think you have to like think about like the different ways of feminism, right? So we're not talking about like, we are like in the United States, we are like completely deprived of rights and we're trying to get the right to vote. Like, we're not there. And thanks to the second wave of feminism, like, women are mostly empowered in society. Like, women have the right to work. Like, we can obtain credit in our own names. Like, and these are all things that occurred because of second wave feminism, which, Nina, I don't know how old you are, but I, like I said, I'm 51 and like I grew up in the 70s, like, very much in that free to be you and me. And it was so great. It was such a beautiful, it's such a beautiful way to be. Like, I never had any doubt that the way that I was in the world as like a butch little tomboy was a problem. It wasn't until later, like when I got a little bit older, that I was like, oh, this is not how women are supposed to be. And then it turned out I was gay, so everything was fine. But So the third wave of feminism, it's like, well, what's the frontier? And like the frontier of the third wave of feminism was like, let's expand how we fuck and who we fuck and talking about fucking and fuck. And like, that's fine. Like, I guess, like, I wouldn't call third wave feminism as feminism. Like, I would call it, I don't know, like a whole lot of talk about fucking, which is, I'm a bit of a prude. I'm not super interested in that. So it was weird and uncomfortable sometimes being a young lesbian in the 90s when that was, you know, that was the stuff. So for me, feminism, like, and putting aside like what is radical feminism, which everyone can look that up, like, feminism is like ensuring that there's space for women in society to be free, fair, to be free, have the right to liberty, have the right to, you know, constitutional based rights like life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. And most importantly is bodily autonomy. Like, women have to have the right to like be in the world and control their bodies and not be controlled by others. And, you know, that probably sounds a little third wave because like the third wave is like, I'm so free with my body, I'll, you know, do a public sex show. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like things that are actually fundamental to like one's well-being, like, you know, decisions over my healthcare. First and foremost.
And you said that you don't see any of that type of feminism happening in the United States lately.
Not on the gender critical side. Like, and I would be happy to be mistaken about that, but the gender critical quote feminists, like, they're obsessed with the trans issue. They're just fucking deranged by the trans issue. And, you know, many years ago I said this. I said the issue over the bathrooms is a complete waste of effort. It really is not going to matter. Like, the United States has 50 states plus the District of Columbia. I wouldn't even begin to imagine how many public bathrooms are in each of those states. Like, what do you really think is going to happen? Like, do you really think you could enforce like men not going, and I'm going to say men, including trans women, like men not going into the women's room. Like, there's no way you can control that. Like, why are you wasting your time? And I got called like a trans activist and all sorts of shit for that. But I stand by that. It's a waste of time. But you still see a lot of that. And it's the same thing with people arguing about pronouns and, you know, oh my God, it's like I'm being like, you know, gaslit if someone is like, my pronouns are she, her, and it's a man. Like, I'm like, if you're that stupid that you're gaslit over that, like, I'm sorry, you have bigger problems than trans women, you know? So like, you know, like I call Corinne a she because like Corinne is in the world, like she transitioned, like I have no problem with that. And I know that there's gender criticals out there that are like, oh, Kathy's a secret man lover, trans activist. And I, you know, I'm like, go fuck yourself. Cause most of those people like don't have the like, you know, courage to put their name on their opinions. They're just hiding behind some avatar. Like they're less of a real person than Corinne is.
Have you heard about the TERF Tranny Alliance?
You know, I haven't. And I think it's probably, if not known, like the TERF acronym is not the acronym that I preferred. There was another trans activist whose name I can't recall, and they came up with the acronym GRU, GRUE, and I cannot remember what it stood for. It was maybe like gender reductive unfortunate exterminationist or some crazy shit. And I much preferred GRU because I thought it sounded better, and I was very disappointed that it was TERF that like won the day. Because this person really made a push for GRU, and they were like, Kathy Brennan's a GRU, and I was like, that sounds okay, you know, all right. It's really funny to me that gender criticals are happy to reclaim TERF, but God forbid gay people reclaim queer.
You know, let me ask you about that, because I have feelings about queer, and it's not because it's a reclaimed slur, but I feel like that a lot of the people who I run into now who call themselves queer are in typically relationships with people of the opposite sex.
I think that the use of queer and who uses it is probably informed by where you live and, you know, who you circulate amongst. And I, you know, you're in Indiana, right?
Yes, but I live on the internet.
Yeah, I would encourage you to get the fuck off the internet, because in the real world where there are real people, like going out to like real restaurants and movies and plays and bars and all that shit that we did before COVID and now we're starting to do again, the queers that I know are gay. Like they're gay people. And a lot of them are my age, because queer as a reclaimed slur started in the late 80s, early 90s. And anyone who knows anything about gay history will be aware of Queer Nation. And so I honestly do not give a fuck what people on the internet are doing or saying about themselves, because they could be anybody. Because like I said, they're just hiding behind an avatar. Like they're not, like you can't like evaluate who they are at any point. And so, yes, on the internet, there's plenty of, you know, people who are like, I'm queer, and then they have pictures of them and their boyfriend. And like, I don't know, if their life is that boring that it spices it up by calling themselves queer, that does not offend me. I don't spend my time getting upset about that. That's not a civil rights issue. That's not a violation of my right as an actual gay person if someone calls themselves queer. Again, this is an issue gender criticals love. They get very offended by people calling themselves queer because it's a signal that they actually must be straight, which I've also been accused of actually being straight, which is fucking hilarious. I'm like, okay. And, you know, the other thing that gender criticals I see doing online, which is really the only place I run into gender criticals, is like, you know, if you dye your hair, like you're like an attention seeking, like whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know. The gender criticals just when they talk like that, I'm like, you people sound boring. Like, what do you do when you get together? Like, are you this fucking like policing of people's behaviors? Because, you know, I'm not interested in that. And as I say that, there are women in Baltimore who are gender critical, who I know they exist and they're out there. And I know for a fact that they're fucking boring because I have spent time with them and I don't like being around them. They're awful.
I don't have a problem with people using whatever labels they want for themselves until they get to the point. And I'm saying this as somebody who's traditionally, I guess, been under the trans umbrella until maybe recently. Who knows how that works? People who don't have any apparent history of really being trans, starting to call themselves trans, and then leveraging that to get into positions where they're talking about what it means to be trans and like educating the public or HR professionals about what it means to be trans.
So like Charles Clymer?
You know, I'll give Charles Clymer a little bit of credit. He transitioned.
Yeah.
But there are even people who...
Wait, what does that mean, he transitioned?
He medically transitioned.
What does it... I mean, that could mean anything. That could mean any number of things.
That's true. It could mean any number of things, but there's a certain threshold that you cross when you medically transition.
That you have irreversible surgery?
If you have irreversible surgery, for sure. If you've been on HRT for more than a couple of weeks, if your body changes somehow because you've medicalized, you've committed yourself to something.
Right. So who, like Corinna, what's an example of that? Because I'm not sure I know who an example of that would be.
Well, the first name that popped to mind would be Kate Soskin. She's a journalist who adopted the non-binary label. And she was a butch lesbian journalist.
Uh-huh.
And then a couple of years ago, she's non-binary now, and now she talks about representing trans issues. Amanda Knox.
I know Amanda Knox.
She's non-binary now, and she's...
Is she really?
She's representing herself as being a spokesperson for trans issues. And people defer to her.
I mean, but like people, that's been happening all the time and it only runs in one direction. So when I started talking about this issue, like I've been out since 1989. I am like a known lesbian activist in Maryland. I've done a lot of work here. I did a lot of organizing to pass the Anti-Discrimination Act. I was a plaintiff in the lawsuit here to strike down the ban on adult consensual private sodomy, and like in the paper with my face, you know, talking about sodomy. Like, I am a known fucking person. And so I think, you know, before I started talking about trans issues, like anytime there was like a gay issue, like I would get calls from reporters because I'm like, I'm a known person. The minute I started talking about trans issues in a critical way, it was like, be-doo-doo-doo, like this person has to be murdered. Like this person must be destroyed. And so like, that only goes, like, at that point, it only went, you know, no one's deferring to me because I'm a woman talking about issues that impact women. Like, I'm sorry, it's irritating that these women are calling themselves non-binary and are now a spokesperson, but I imagine that's because they're saying things that are favorable to the traditional, like, position you're supposed to have as a trans person. So they're grateful for those people talking, I'm sure. But I hear what you're saying. Like a regular person calling themselves queer or non-binary, like I might think they're stupid. Like if they're, you know, there is actually a guy here who's like an eccentric artist who has been calling himself queer for like 17 million decades. He's like 100 years old and he's just like a perverted straight man. Like that's what he is. I'm not going to say his name, but anyone from Baltimore listening to this knows who the fuck I'm talking about. Like he's just a pervert, not gay, not, you know, he's straight, but he's like, he's queer. Like he's annoying. but like from, you know, like an, like something I'm going to invest my precious political organizing time. Like that's just a fucking, that's just dumb. Like I'm not going to care about it. And you know, who the mic gets passed to, so to speak, like this is, I said Charles Clymer because it was, it seems very, very clear to me just from observing him, like that him transitioning, it seems very cynical to me. If I had to guess, like when Charles Clymer first came out, there was a Facebook page that we ran called Organizing for Women's Liberation. He messaged the page and was like, "My name is Charles Clymer, and I would like to support your efforts." And like we were all like, "Fuck off! You're some weird guy," you know. And like now he's like, you know, Charlotte Clymer. Like I'm like Social Clymer. That's what you are, not Charlotte Clymer. So, I mean, there's always going to be some of that, but again, like none of that is stuff that necessarily impedes life, liberty, or pursuit of happiness. It's just annoying stuff. And that's a thing like watching gender criticals talk is they're just like this reactive machinery that gets upset about things that are not actually problems. And, you know, one of those things is lesbian erasure, which is not happening. Like lesbians are not being erased. I'm here to tell people that because I think they need to hear that.
I'm at a loss for words.
Yeah, I thought I really want to talk about that because speaking of people like getting like cachet from identity, that happens in the gender critical movement too. And there's several like really conservative women who have decided they're lesbians and who use that label quite a bit to say, "I'm a lesbian. I speak for the lesbians." And I'm like, you are like a baby. You're not like a full grown lesbian. Like you have not been around. Like you don't speak for the lesbians. You're kind of using that identity. And in some ways, when gender criticals complain about trans activists being all, you know, obsessed to identity, so are the gender criticals, which is fine. I'm happy for people to be lesbian and be bisexual and be themselves. But like, you don't get to use that as a club or as a reason why I should credit your opinion more than someone else's opinion, especially when your opinion is harmful to lesbians. Like the stuff that Wolf did in organizing around the Equality Act was harmful for lesbians. Organizing around the Title VII litigation was harmful for lesbians. And they had no shame about it. They were like, "No, this is what we must do to protect the lesbians." I'm not aware of a single thing they've done that actually is helpful to lesbians. I could be wrong.
What was the Title VII litigation?
That was the Bostock case and the Stevens case. So Wolf organized with Concerned Women for America to oppose a favorable ruling for the plaintiff. They tried to say just in the Stevens case, but I mean, Concerned Women for America was there opposing both of those cases. So I'm not sure that they thread the needle on that one. But anyway, about lesbian erasure, like the trans stuff started, I first started seeing it in the early 90s. And at that time it was like, you know, like a random one or two man who called themselves a woman would be at the gay club. And that person was never really anyone that anyone was worried about. Like, you know, we were like, that's just this weirdo who wants to be here and they're not really bothering anyone.
Yeah. That was me.
Yeah. That's I know you, like I know this person, like this is not someone I'm worried about. And like usually they were like a gay man, like they weren't, you know, that can vary. But like then it was like, this is like a weird gay guy. And like, that's fine. And then like in the mid 90s is when women like women I knew started being like, "I am a man." And like, I'm like, okay, that's your life. Like, I don't get it, but that's fine. And I have a lot of people that are friends and contemporaries who transitioned. And that was just part of that was part of the experience of being in the lesbian community, because only women can become trans men. Like that. So it's not a separate experience from the lesbian community. It's part of the lesbian community, which is why, like, if any women listening ever went to Mishfest, like, there were tons of trans men who went to Mishfest, and who, when they were there, were like, we're women. And we're here as women. Now, there were some trans men who didn't go because they were like, I am a man and I can no longer go. So, but it's a complicated issue in the community. I tried to like talk about gender identity stuff in Maryland in the late 90s, and I got a lot of death threats, and like I stopped talking about it because, you know, I value my life. And then I started talking about it in 2010. And in between 2000 and 2010, it seemed to me that the beliefs about transgender identity had changed. Whereas in the 90s and early 2000s, I don't think trans people believed they could actually change sex. But by 2010, they sure did. Like, they surely did. And that was shocking to me. The other thing that changed between the late 90s and 2010 is that you could no longer say tranny, which... I bring this up because, like, in the 90s, like, tranny was kind of an affectionate term. Like, it wasn't, like, in group, in the community. Like, it wasn't a slur. Like, and I think Leslie Feinberg has a good quote on this. It's like, it's not really the word, it's the intent behind it. So, like, you know, I had friends who transition and they'd be like, you know, I'm a tranny, and I'm like, okay, tranny, like, whatever. And it was like affectionate. And by 2010, it was like, you cannot say that word. It's like a terrible word, which I only learned because I was actually having a conversation with someone and I said tranny and she was very offended. And I was like, oh, I didn't know. Anyway, but when I became aware that people really were convinced they could change their sex, that was kind of when I was like, shit, this is really bad for lesbians. Like, and this shit can get really bad. And then the stuff with the cotton ceiling kind of like made me lose my shit a little bit, because it's just so offensive. But between then, which that was like, what, 2012, 2013, and now, like, lesbians are not being erased. Like, lesbians are here to stay. They're fine. Like, if you have eyes, you'll see them anywhere. And the gender criticals on the internet like to overstate the existential threat to lesbians, because it helps their cause. It helps like up the sense of urgency of why you have to advocate for things that many lesbians otherwise might not advocate for, such as restrictions on the civil rights of trans people, which I think is what's happening now and which I oppose.
What sort of restrictions on the civil rights of trans people do you see gender criticals?
Gender criticals have supported the Don't Say Gay legislation in Florida and have specifically misrepresented what that legislation does. I've seen that quite a bit online, and I believe that Kara Dansky's been on Tucker Carlson about that, if I'm not mistaken. Natasha Chart has also talked about that, although I think Natasha recently had a terrible falling out with Wolf, which as a consumer of, you know, gossip on the internet, I found quite delicious and amusing. I'm sure it's very painful for her, but I could not care less about that. So the Don't Say Gay stuff, I see a lot of fear-mongering around the provision of healthcare. And I know, Corinna, this is probably something you and I won't agree on, because I know you've advocated for some stuff, in, I think, in Indiana. But those types of efforts, I don't think if lesbians... I think that if people could get less reactive, they might realize that when right-wingers talk about trans people, they don't really see much difference between trans people and lesbians or gay men. Like, we're all just perverts to them. So I'm hoping at some point they'll wake up and be like, what the fuck were we thinking?
It's funny, because recently I've talked to and met quite a few Republican lesbians. In fact, I had one Republican lesbian get furious at me for not voting for Trump. She like disowned everybody that didn't vote for Trump and never spoke to them again in the last election.
So there have always been Republican gay people. The Log Cabin Republicans have been around for a long time. And there's always been Republican lesbians. And so that's not new. I would suggest that anyone who's willing to lose friendships or family members over a political issue have their priorities fucked up, which is another thing I've noticed about both trans activists and gender criticals, is they're willing to lose and alienate family members over this stuff, which I just think is sad. Like, I see people posting like, you know, I'm alienated from my family members because of this position I have. And I don't know. I think that's very sad. And I for the lesbian that you met who lost family members because they didn't vote for Trump, I think that person is mistaken.
I don't know if she lost family members. She's not the only Republican. She was just an extreme example of a Republican lesbian. Well, but I know other Republican lesbians who are much more moderate and have all kinds of friends.
Yeah.
And
it's, well, like, Nina,
Republican lesbians are a thing.
Yeah, Nina, it turns out lesbians are people, right? So like we like, you know, we have the same like views as many other people or not. Like we fall along all sorts of political lines. Like I'm a lawyer and I, you know, like I am not really in a lot of the circles that some lesbians who are very active on this issue are, because I'm busy like working and like doing other things. And I recently went on an Olivia cruise trip, Olivia travel trip, which is kind of a bucket list item for lesbians. Like you have to do an Olivia trip. And, you know, the women that were there were like exactly the women I thought would be there. Like it was like lesbians with money who are mostly apolitical and who are just want to have a good time. And those ladies are great. Like we had a good time. It was fun.
I mentioned that because a couple times you've mentioned how bad Trump and Republicans are for lesbians.
Oh yeah.
Are the lesbians who are Trump supporters or who are Republicans, do they just not know that?
I can't tell you if they don't know that or not. They might not care, right? Like they might, like many other people who vote Republican, like they might vote Republican because of, you know, capitalism. I don't know what their politics are. Or they might be like rabidly anti-abortion. Like there's different reasons why people vote Republican or vote against what you perceive as their self-interest. I'm just telling you as a fact that Trump was bad for gay people. Like that's a demonstrable fact. And so if someone was like, well, I'm a gay person voting for Trump, therefore that's proof that Trump isn't bad for gay people. Like that's just a fallacious argument. Like that's not the case. That's just what they did. Which again, is their right in a country where you have the right to cast your vote however you want. But it's embedded in the Republican Party platform items that are specifically anti-gay. So, for example, marriage is between one man and one woman. Like, that lesbian Republican would not be able to marry her partner. Although I might suggest that she might find a hard time dating because she sounds kind of dreadful. That's a joke.
I think that there's three issues that the Republicans are using under the transgender umbrella as effective wedge issues. Mm-hmm. And the first one is the sports issue, males participating in women's sports. The second one is the medicalization of children to being trans. And the third one, they're not using it very effectively yet, but I think that they're going to catch on and start rolling with it, which is men and women's prison. Where do you sit on those issues, and what do you think might happen if the Republicans really operationalize those issues?
I'll start with the last issue because of all of the issues, that is actually an issue. Like that is actually like a significant issue for women who are unable to avoid the harm that's caused to them by being housed in an institution with a male person. That's an issue I've talked about for a long, long time. It is it is inconceivable to me that the Democratic Party is so willing to go along with the fantasy that trans people are actually the opposite sex, that they are willing to put the lives of women in prison at risk. It defies all understanding to me. And I'm not going to come up with a conspiracy theory as to why it's happening. I just know that it is happening, and it's morally repugnant and wrong. And so, you know, I was a registered Democrat in Maryland for a long time, and then I was a registered libertarian because the Democratic Party, when the WikiLeaks happened, when the WikiLeaks hacked the Democrat, my information got leaked. Like, I was part of the leak. And so I started, I had already been getting harassing phone calls from trans activists, but then I started getting harassing phone call from Republicans, like weirdo people. And so I changed my party affiliation because I was really fucking pissed. I called the Democratic Party headquarters. I was like, what the fuck? Like, what are you going to do? And they're like, oh, nothing. Sorry. And I'm like, that is, if you were a business, you would be out of business. So I can't stay as a registered Democrat. But then the Libertarian Party here got decertified. So now I'm a Democrat again. Anyway, so all of that to say, I have a lot of Democratic Party friends. And I have talked to them about this issue for years and years and years. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? This is such, it is just morally wrong that you would house like males in female prison. It's wrong, wrong, wrong. Regardless of whether you think trans women are women, it's fucking wrong. And so some of those people that I know who were in positions to do something did something in Maryland to try to limit that happening in my state. But yeah, the Democrats, they deserve to get their ass handed to them on that issue. And they probably will. If the Republicans figure it out, they probably will. Now, in order for that to be believable, though, you have to believe that Republicans care about women in prison, which I don't think they actually do. So we'll see how that plays out, because, you know, the Republican Party is like more law and order than the Democratic Party. So we'll see what happens on that. Obviously, the issue that they're getting the most traction with is, of the two other issues you mentioned, are the provision of healthcare, trans healthcare to minors, which has been very successful because they have, you know, identified the provision of that type of healthcare as being consistent with child abuse and a lack of safeguarding, which not coincidentally dovetails with the messaging gender criticals use when they talk about this issue, which it's all about the children, like drag queen story hours. It's about the children and children safeguarding and all this stuff, which is what people like, you know, said about gay people 30 years ago. And oh, they're still saying it now. So I mean, Karina, I really think you and I will disagree on that issue. I think I'd rather take the risk of parents being able to make decisions between them and their doctor about what, quote, I'm using air quotes, healthcare, their kids get, than rely on the government to say, you know, what types of healthcare they should get.
Do you know the main thing that I'm trying to accomplish?
I do.
Right now,
and
Kathy?
I actually, you're talking about expanding the statute of limitations for malpractice. I do support that. And I reached out to a malpractice lawyer here in Maryland, like kind of floating, like, hey, what do you think of this? I haven't heard back from her yet. So then let me stop using you as like, we disagree, because I do agree with that. But I don't agree with laws or with executive orders saying that, you know, the provision of trans healthcare to children. And again, I'm doing trans healthcare in quotes.
Right.
It should be illegal or not permitted. Like, I think that the provision of healthcare for minors is traditionally left to parents in consultation with their doctor. And it is not really, you know, goody turfy 275's fucking business.
I don't think that lawmakers are competent or capable of participating in the relationship between patients and their doctors. And I don't think that they should be making legislation at the level of determining what sort of procedures patients should be able to have. But yeah, trying to put more of the liability onto the providers is really the main thing that I'm trying to do.
Yeah, and I think like it's obviously like a very complicated issue. And I will tell you, about 10 years ago, because I have two kids, my kids are older now. One of the radical feminist bloggers was like, you know, you're an out lesbian and you had these two kids. You should talk about this issue from like, you know, as a parent. And I was like, there is no fucking way I will do that. Like, no, thank you. Like, I will not do that. And the reason for that is because my children, everyone else's children, are people and are entitled to some measure of privacy in, about their lives and about, you know, about themselves. And to see like what I see happening online, where you have these parents who have become detached from their children over this issue, and then talking about their children and their children's health care and medical procedures. I think all of those people are bad fucking parents. I think that's a bad parenting thing to do. And I don't know if either of you have children. Like, so I don't know, like, I don't want to assume. But I think that's such a horrible mistake that they are making. Like, I think there's a way that you can talk about that issue without injecting your identity as a parent. Like, you should listen to me because I'm a ROGD mom or whatever. Like, I see ROGD mom and I just think you're a bad mom. Like, you, like, some, there's some fucking tremendous failure that occurred that you feel like talking to strangers on the internet about how you don't have your kid anymore is like better than, you know, doing the work of having a relationship with your kid. So that I don't like so much. So anyway, so I think the Republicans have made a lot of headway with that issue. And then the sports issue, God, I wish to God that like someone would step up, you know, the NCAA would like step up and just be like, here's what we're going to do and solve it. Because you have like different levels of sport. Like at your local elementary school, like the one or two trans kids, if they even exist at the school participating in like a rec league, like who gives a shit? Like at like the fifth grade level, all those kids suck. Like they all suck. Put them all on the same team. Like if anything, like it's an argument for like, you know, co-ed sucky sports leagues. At the level of like a Leah, what's that guy's name? Leah Thomas.
Leah Thomas.
Obviously he should not be competing with women. That is my opinion. I don't know what the solution is to try to solve that. But I wish that people would come up with an argument more than like, well, he's just a pervert loser who is losing as a man. And now he wants to win. Because I think that's also not like a good argument. Like that's,
I thought the argument was just the sports are segregated by sex and not gender identity. And then you don't have to judge anybody. You just have the material reality of sex and you.
Yeah, but Nina, what's sex? That's the counter to that. Like they say, well, sex is more than what you were born with. Like,
yeah, but there are material. I mean, we can have a conversation about that. Currently, I think that Carol Hooven offered pretty good standards for what sex is, which is the pathway, the developmental pathway formed around large gametes or small gametes. Then that leaves room for CAIS women. That it just has to do with your developmental pathway. And that's, you know, that's only a problem for such a tiny, tiny, tiny sliver of people that, you know, in in almost all cases, sex is not ambiguous remotely. And then in the case of that tiny, tiny sliver, we can talk about that. But ambiguity of sex is not based on gender identity. There's material reasons for
Yeah, absolutely. That. Except that, like, when someone, to use Corinna's term earlier, medically transitions, like, that is a fact that impacts people's bodies and how they change. I'm not saying I agree with this position. I'm just saying, like, this is like the bullshit, like slippery slope bullshit that enables Aaliyah Tom is it's Thomas, right? Yeah. Like Thomas, to be able to participate. And
yeah, but it's just it's like it's very easy to refute that. It's like only a man can go through those sorts of transitions only. And so it's for me, it's like, yeah, it's bullshit, but it's not a philosophical struggle for me. It's not one of these things where it's like, and no one will ever know how to segregate sports
Nina,
by
I'm not
sex.
Having
it's
just philosophical a political struggle. Issue. I'm trying to see like, what is the solution? Like, what is the practical solution? Cause no one seems to want to come up with one that would preserve women's sports for women. Like that, like who's in a position to do so? Like that's and like, I don't know how. Like that's a political problem. I don't really know how to solve. I imagine like if we have more Martinas, I mean Martina Navratilova, like so fun to watch her Twitter. Like if we have more people like that, like saying like, look, this just isn't fair. But then the other thing I think is important to remember is like this is like. Like a, this isn't like a main, this is like a fringy issue, like that doesn't impact, it doesn't impact that many people, right? Like the prison issue impacts a lot more people. I'd like to see like, you know, I'd like to see more like thoughtful, purposeful attention on the prison issue than the, there's the one guy in women's swimming participating. And who's, you know, over time, like it might be more, but I'm saying like, if I was to prioritize things, the prison thing is more important.
Yeah. But the reason sports is more talked about is that you can say it only impacts the athletes, but actually sports is watched by a lot of people. So a lot more people are aware of sports than they are aware of anything having to do with prison conditions.
I wouldn't
unfortunately.
Even say it's like sports is what I mean. Like people, like I said, like no one gives a shit about people in prison, like because those people are bad.
Right. They deserve what they get in prison, right? Because they've done something
exactly.
to end up
so,
there.
So yeah. So my position on trans women. In women's sports is I don't think they should be in women's sports. But I don't know how to fix that. Like, and I'm glad I'm not responsible for fixing it. And I don't know, like, I don't know enough about like the other way. Cause I think it's different when a woman transitions to become a man than when a man transitions to become a woman. And I think there's this like, there's this belief that we have to talk about those things as if they're the same when they're not the same. And men might transition for reasons that are different from why women might transition. So this is a big old thorny issue.
Kathy, you're one of the most famous people on social media, I would say, probably because you were very widely known as being a fake goth. Can you explain what that's all about and how it is that you developed a reputation for being a fake goth? And are you a fake goth?
Obviously, I'm a fake goth, clearly. That's so funny. So let me first say, like, I never set out to become a fake goth. Like, when I was a teenager, like, I listened to, like, The Cure and The Smiths and New Order and Depeche Mode. And, you know, I just thought I was... you know, moody. I didn't realize that I might be a fake goth. And then I saw Susie and the Banshees at Radio City Music Hall in the fall of 1988. And I realized that I was like a super fake goth. I'm like, this is my life. I'm going to dedicate my life to this. And I remember listening to Floodland by the Sisters of Mercy that tape was the length of the drive from Fordham University in the Bronx to my parents' house in upstate New York. It's like 50 minutes long. So, you know, I regularly dedicated my life to fake gothness. When I went to law school, there was a club called the Continental, which is was the best fucking goth club, industrial music. I'm also a fake industrial music person. So anyway, you know, I stomped around in my docks and, you know, fast forward to 2016 and I had to get a hysterectomy because my insides rebelled on me. Like I had lots of female problems. I know it's very transphobic to say those things. I hope you won't cancel me. But I needed to get a hysterectomy and I was home really high on like some really powerful medication. Cause getting a hysterectomy is like, it's like a serious operation. It is a big deal. So I'm super high. And at that time, I had a Twitter account. I don't remember what Twitter account I had because I think, you know, my original Twitter account was suspended in August of 2013. And this is like, you know, March or April of 2016. So I had a number of Twitter accounts that would then get serially suspended because I really don't give a fuck. So anyway, some like random person online noticed that I had put in my Twitter bio, like I had put a bunch of identity like tags making fun of, you know, because people put identity tags in their bios all the time. So I did that too. And it like goth wasn't the only one. It was like, you know, like Irish lesbian, like whatever, lawyer, because all of these things are identities. But this person was like fake goth. And I thought that was really hilarious. And I haven't responded. I think I responded with an LOL because I thought it was funny. And then it just kind of took off. Like Kathy Brennan is a fake goth. And as someone who's been suspended from social media, like more times than I can count on both of my hands, I was like, what happens if I report this? Because I think, you know, if it's not known, like it's pretty like obvious that there are different algorithms that are used to determine whether or not content should be, someone should be suspended for different content. And like, so-and-so is a so-and-so is a very easy like line of code to write. Like if that happens and it's reported, like it gets deleted and someone gets suspended. And I don't know if it's the case anymore, but at that time, like you could write Corinna is a toad and like, I could report that and I would get suspended. Like the content really doesn't matter. It's just the pattern of it. Anyway, so I reported one person and they got immediately suspended. And I was like, oh my God, that's so fucking funny. So I have a few friends and I texted them. I was like, this is really funny. I said, can you just report some of these tweets just to see what happens? And so all these people started getting suspended. And then it was on Facebook. Like people were going on Facebook to complain on Facebook. Like that bitch, Kathy Brennan is so, you know, butthurt that I called her a fake goth that I'm going to come here and say, Kathy Brennan is a fake goth. So I was like, well, what happens if we do this on Facebook? And so then all those people started getting suspended. So I'm in bed, like recovering from a hysterectomy on pain medication. So I'm like pretty high. And I'm just thinking this is like the fucking funniest thing I've ever done. Right. I'm like, this is great. So like it was me and like three of my friends were just kind of reporting people, you know, and like it's easy to search posts on Facebook and Twitter by like a phrase. And the phrase here is very obvious. It's Kathy Brennan is a fake goth. And just go through tick, 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 report them all. And so like, I don't know how many people got suspended. It seemed like hundreds of people got suspended for saying that. And that was taken as, you know, they were like, this is the Streisand effect. Cause now everyone knows Kathy Brennan is a fake goth. And I was like, I'm like, look, I'm 45 years old. Like, I don't give, yes, I'm very fake. I'm a fake goth. That's right. But like, it was very funny to me to watch the reaction to it. Cause you know, like there's only so many times you can watch like The Office on repeat or like whatever it was at the time. So it was just entertainment. And to this day, people will, even my children are aware of the fake goth thing and they will be like, you're a fake goth. And it's just, you know, it's just funny. But yeah, I think that there are people out there that think I was very offended. And that's why I got everyone suspended. And I was like, okay, that's right. That's what happened. But that, what I just told you is what happened is it was just, here's an algorithm. Let's report it. And people got really upset because people get very upset if they can't be online because they live, you know, their lives online.
Well, now we know the story behind the fake goth.
I'm still fake though.
So, It's okay. You can be your true, authentic, fake self with us. Kathy, for anybody who's listening who's interested in knowing more about what you're currently up to or any of the projects that you're working on, I think there was Feminism by the Sea is one of them. What would you like people to check out?
Yeah. So I think we were talking about, like, I kind of stopped doing stuff when Trump got elected because things got very ugly. And we started doing more organizing, like, in the community rather than external. So in 2019, my wife and I put on a radical feminist conference in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And we haven't done it again, obviously, because of COVID. And also, I'm not sure if we're inclined to do it again in the current environment because of gender criticals, but that's Radical Feminism by the Sea. They have a Facebook page and an Instagram. But if people want to know what I think about various things, including Baltimore news, my original Twitter account that was wrongfully suspended in 2013 was recently unsuspended, which is like, what, 9 years later? So my Bug Brennan Twitter is back. And I actually would, you know, I know Karina, I've met you in person and like, you know, you could call me on the phone and verify, like, that's my Twitter. There are a number of gender criticals who are like, that's not the real Kathy Brennan. That's some trans activist. And I'm like, again, like, these women are stupid. Like, these people are stupid. Like, anyway,
all right. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight.
Nice to see you.
Thank you, Kathy. Oh, we have to say goodbye to our wonderful listeners. Thank you for listening, wonderful TERFs and trannies.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Heterodorks. You can support our podcast by visiting anchor.fm/heterodorks. Or by directly supporting Nina Paley on Patreon at patreon.com/Nina Paley.